G'day, it's Nigel here. Welcome back to the Sax School Online Podcast. In this episode, we're talking about wind synths. What are they and how can they help you as a sax player? And to help me, I'm actually talking with the guy that advises big brands like Roland when they're designing their new wind synths, and that's Alistair Parnell. It's going to be a fun conversation. Let's get stuck in. Hey, real quick, just before we get started with the conversation today, if you love learning how to play saxophone better and you enjoy this podcast, could I just ask you to share it with one other person? Honestly, it would mean the world to us and it would just help us to reach more friends like you. So, Alistair, wind synths, I guess it's been 50 years or something since the first ones showed up in the 70s, but I've been a fan of them ever since the mid-80s. I remember hearing Michael Brecker's In a Sentimental Mood when that recording came out. Must be in 86 or something like that. Steps Ahead. Yep. Yeah, and I knew I had to get one of those. It was an Akai Iwi that he was playing, and it was an early Akai Iwi that I bought as my first wind synth, and I've had a string of them since then. But there's lots of changes, so many new ones on the market these days, and I'm by no means an expert, even though I've had one for such a long time. You, on the other hand, are an expert, so I'm really keen to dig into this conversation with you today. But maybe we should start with, I'd just love to know how you discovered wind synths, because you're a saxophone player as well, right? So what was what was the trigger for you?
Well, pretty much exactly the same time, sort of mid-80s, I was at music college in London doing classical saxophone, and there was a huge explosion in keyboards coming out, right? And I used to go to the keyboard shop and play around with the keyboards. Then I heard about a WX7, a Yamaha instrument. Well, this was the perfect marriage for me because it was all those kind of cool keyboard sounds, and it was controlled by, I mean, I do play keyboard, but it was controlled by a saxophone type fingering. So that was great. I was absolutely sold. I remember that first instrument cost me about 1,500 quid, I think.
It's funny, you and I are about the same age, and I also did a classical degree while I was doing all my jazz gigs as well. Yep. And I remember going to the music shop and seeing this WX7 with the little plasticky keys and all that. I thought, oh my goodness, it seems amazing. Yep. It also seemed to me to be a lot easier in concept to play than an iwi, but I started my journey with the iwi. But anyway, for somebody who's listening to this and probably is a bit baffled about what on earth we're talking about, perhaps we should start the conversation with what is a wind synth?
Okay, so the simplest way of thinking of wind synthesizer is it's usually an instrument which is fingered either like a woodwind instrument or a brass instrument, because you can get an EVI, electric valve instrument. It would usually respond to breath pressure, and most of them will respond to bite pressure as well. So it's kind of like a keyboard that you can blow into and get a lot of musical expression, because it's constantly measuring your breath output and your bite pressure as well. So that's essentially what a wind synth is.
Right, so you're getting a lot of the input that you can do from a saxophone, where, you know, like you're saying about controlling your breath and expression and vibrato and all that sort of stuff, but you can use synthesizer sounds, which is a great concept, particularly if you are really comfortable playing saxophone, but you're less confident playing a keyboard. And we already talked about the Yamaha version back in the day and the Akai version, and both of those companies still have models now, but there's lots of different brands and models as well, isn't there?
Yeah. And you know, they've really taken to concentrating on certain aspects of a wind synthesizer. So at the moment, I mean, this is a subjective thing, but there are instruments like the Emeo, which is a brilliant, it really feels like a saxophone instrument. Metal-bodied, proper keywork on it. The same goes with the Yamaha YDS series. And they're instruments that are really primarily set up to, firstly, feel like a saxophone to play in terms of the fingering. So they've got proper fingering keys on the instrument, mechanical moving keys. And then you've got the other side of things. So Akai still are producing instruments. There's a new rad. I don't know if you've ever seen that. It's a funky looking thing. It looks like an iwi, but you play with your fingers equally distance from your mouth. So it's kind of sideways like this.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll have to look that up. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
And I guess the other thing that's changed a lot is the technology has got so much better. The MEO that you mentioned is interesting because I can see somebody who wants to play saxophone but wants to shortcut the learning process being interested in that because it looks like a saxophone, like you say, but it's got all the technology inside it. And back in the day, I remember the first Akai iwi that I had the stick part of it and then a big fat cable that went to a big rack unit. And you had to do all the jiggery pokery on there to get the sounds that you wanted. It was quite complicated, but everything's all built in these days, isn't it?
Yeah. So like I say, things like the new RAD, they are sort of primarily a controller. It fingers like a saxophone, but its primary use is a controller, and it connects to outboard gear. So you can plug it into a sampler or a computer, a soft synth, an iPad, whatever you like. So they are moving in slightly different directions. And somebody that's looking into wind synthesizers, you've got to do your homework and you've got to think carefully about what your primary use is going to be. If it's as a practice instrument, which is very useful, you might want to look at something like EMEO or the Yamaha instruments because they're going to feel more like a saxophone. The downside of that is that those instruments don't have a bite sensor. So you're not going to get any response from your bite. You are from the breath, but not from the bite. So it takes a little bit of sorting out and seeing what you really want to get from it. Me personally, I like the idea of having a whole range of extra sounds. You know, people very often say to me, oh, what does the saxophone sound like on an aerophone? I nearly always decline because it sounds dreadful on an aerophone. But I use it to access a whole heap of other sounds, just like a piano player might use a keyboard to get string sounds and wind sounds, brass sounds, synth sounds, all of that stuff. So you really need to think carefully about what your primary use would be for a wind synthesizer.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And certainly as a pro player, I see most people using them for what you're talking about, which is accessing those extra sounds in a performance environment or in a recording environment in a studio. Being able to more fluently play a string line. That sounds a bit more realistic as well. So that's interesting. So we just back up a little bit from there. So we've got thousands of people learning with us at sax school. And, you know, we teach people saxophone, right? Adults, we teach adults to play saxophone. But we have quite a lot of our members who dabble with digi saxophones of various different flavors, Akais and Yamahas and whatever else, Rolands. We also have some students that come to us who start their whole journey on saxophone with a wind synth, which is an interesting thing that's sort of evolved more in the last few years. And with things like the Roland Aerophone, I can start to see how that is a bit more feasible because you've got a reed and you've got some great sounds and it looks a bit like a saxophone. And people can sort of start the process of being familiar with, you know, reading music and expressing themselves and making music that way. Is that something that you see your students do too?
Yeah. You know, I think we would agree that if you want to learn saxophone, you got to get a saxophone, right? But as a way into getting the idea of how your fingering systems work, getting used to how you would blow and even articulate on an instrument, then I think something like an aerophone can be a good starting point. I think you've got to be always mindful of the fact that, you know, the saxophone relies so much on what you're doing internally, and you can't get any of that from an aerophone. So I think the sooner you can get onto a real saxophone is definitely going to be better.
Yeah. I do agree with you. But, I do agree with you, because that's a big part of the puzzle, isn't it? Getting your embouchure right, all that sort of stuff. However, if you're in a situation where you don't have the ability to make a lot of sound, or we've got quite a few members who travel a lot with work and they'll take an aerophone or an MEO or something like that with them. In fact, Fred, one of our tutors, so he's on the road with Average White Band all the time, touring all around the world, and he takes a travel sax with him. Yeah. Because he can work on his fingering and lots of stuff when he's in a hotel room.
And I don't know about you, but for me, I spend a lot of time here teaching saxophone, and I think I spend most of my time helping people with pulse and rhythm, right? And I know we want to get a good sound, but very often we're dealing with pulse and rhythm because a lot of people struggle with that early on, and certainly that's stuff that you can do on a wind synthesizer.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's it's something you could be developing on your wind synth.
Yes.
All right, so brilliant. So we've got a couple of ideas there. You could start your journey on a wind synth, but probably best to transfer over to a real sax if you get the chance to. You could supplement your existing saxophone journey by having a wind synth and working on some of these skills in a more sound-controlled environment. Stick your headphones on, not going to wake the kids or get grief from the person in the next hotel room. If you're a more advanced player, you could be using a wind synth to access all these different sounds and different colors and possibly open up some performing and recording opportunities too. So what about if we break it down and look at some of the big players then in the wind synth digi-sax world?
Well, we've already mentioned Michael Brecker, of course. You would have to say he is the godfather because he is the absolute top of the chain, okay? I would say, you know, really closely followed by Bob Minzer. So anything Yellow Jackets is going to have Bob Minzer. Bob Minzer is probably playing, I would say, at least a good third of their material he plays on a wind synthesizer. So he's a good one to look at as well. There's a guy called Jeff Kashua, saxophone player. He does some great things on wind synth. And there's a couple of other players who we have all heard but might not realize we've heard. So one of those guys is Judd Miller. Judd Miller is really an EVI player, but to get a sense of the sound, he's a very good one. And the great Tom Scott. Now, Tom Scott really started on Lyricon. Now, Tom Scott is actually playing Aerophone now, which is interesting. But we have all heard Tom Scott. We might not realize we've heard Tom Scott playing a wind synthesizer. But so most of us are familiar with, he was fairly famous, wasn't he? That guy, Michael Jackson. Do you remember him? Michael Jackson, you know, and he did that track called Billie Jean. Tom Scott's on Billie Jean playing Lyricon. You know, so we hear this stuff quite often and we don't realize we've heard it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Tom did a thing for us at sax school, actually. It was a really, really fun session. And yeah, it was interesting to talk to him a little bit about all that kind of thing. I guess Tom's big thing was he was really busy in the studio, right? Playing with just about everybody. And particularly through that period of the 80s, synths were such a integral part of the flavor of all pop music. So stands to reason that there's going to be those synth things in there that are played on Lyricon. Oh, I just want to jump in to give you a quick reminder that if you want to improve your sax playing this year, don't forget to follow our podcast so you don't miss any future episodes. And if you really enjoy this episode, hey, it would help us so much if we could be cheeky and ask you to leave us a 5-star review. Honestly, that would just be brilliant. Thanks. Let's get back to the episode. I guess the big players these days in terms of brands and devices, so we've talked about some of the artists, but in terms of the brands, then the Roland with their range of aerophones, and I know you consult with Roland, right? You're their go-to guy and advisor for sounds and things like that. So the Roland aerophones one to consider. Can maybe give us a quick rundown on the different options there.
So on the Roland side, you've got I think four that are still, you know, in production. Their first one, which was the AE10, they've stopped producing that one now. But you can go from a very small list, it's like a recorder size instrument, that's the AE01. That doesn't have palm keys and side keys, so it's really, but it's very nice and portable. I mean, I've actually taken it on holiday before and just had a tootle occasionally. There's an Aerophone Go. It's also known as the AE05. Now, that has got all the saxophone key work on it. The sounds are a little bit limited, but got good breath and bite control. And it's smaller than a Sopranino sax. So that's pretty compact to take around. And then you go on to what I consider the sort of, we call them Zen core instruments. So there's an AE20. and an AE30. They have Roland's flagship sound chip in there. You're basically getting the same internals as some of the synths that Roland do, and they're like £3,000 for a synth with that chip in there. So the fact that we have access to that that device with that cool chip inside it that makes all these fantastic sounds, and they've been properly programmed, some of them by myself, a lot of them by a guy called Matt Traum, who's over in America. A lot of people have come across him in the WinSynth world. Then you've got a fantastic sound source and a decent feeling instrument, great bite and breath control. So those, the top two, the AE20 and the AE30, are really worth having a look at.
Yeah, they're awesome as well. I've got a Roland AE30, and yep, it's just fun. You know, there's so, like you say, there's so many great, great sounds on there. And also, it feels really natural and easy to play under your fingers. So maybe we can have a chat about the Akai Iwi in a second. But with the Roland, you've got those buttons that you actually push down. And the first time I picked it up, I thought, it feels a bit plasticky, like a bit clicky-clacky.
Yeah.
But once you get past that, and as soon as you stick on headphones, that is irrelevant anyway. It just feels easy. It's easy to play. And so it's been an interesting journey for me. I've got a couple of teenage sons, and they love music, but neither of them decided to go down the saxophone route. They do other stuff. But interestingly enough, my older son, he's always snatching my AE30 out of here and playing. He plays it all the time, and he absolutely loves it. And so I can really understand why they're so popular with our sax school students as well. Just because you can pick them up, it's instant gratification. It sounds great. It's expressive.
Yeah.
Hey, it might be fun to hear what it sounds like if you've got yours there, Alistair.
Yeah. So I'll give you a little blast on a couple of synthesizer sounds. These are my kind of bread and butter sounds, if you like. So you know, you can hear the dynamic control, you can hear the vibrato that I'm introducing, which feels very natural to me. I've got all that kind of scoop and vibrato. I can do all of that stuff. It feels very, very natural. But then you get onto this whole host of stuff where you, of course, you can play more than one note at a time, so you can do some fancy things with chords and things. And, you know, I can do things like I can tune individual notes as well. So I can get into some really kind of unusual sounds, like kind of Arabic scale, right? And by the way, that drone sound, I set that up by playing my first note, pressing my thumb down here, and it will keep going until I disengage the drone sound, right? So loads and loads of great, you know, and lovely harmony sounds. I mean, that's going to rival any kind of keyboard player, right? But then, you know, there are some instrumental sounds, and I use quite a lot of instrumental sounds. So, you know, we can do anything from a little recorder or something. I don't know if you ever heard Jeff Kashua doing his little recorder duet thing. So you're kind of playing like a duet with yourself because you're just using a delay, you know. Lots of opportunities to play kind of instrumental sounds like a nice harmonica. So there's plenty of opportunity. There's lovely bass clarinets on this thing. Some great brass sounds as well. So there's a whole heap of sounds in there. I mean, you know, I've got like 600 sounds on this thing to step through, you know. So, yeah, it's just endless. But each sound, you really need to spend time on each sound getting the best from it because they articulate slightly differently. The dynamic range is a little bit different. So you're not just going to pick one of these up and get sounds like that going straight away. There's a little bit of thought that has to go into how you actually articulate, just like there is on a sax, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think the really interesting thing that you said today was that, you know, thinking about it like a keyboard, not like a saxophone. That's really where you're getting the magic of a wind synth.
Yeah.
Which is exciting, right? It's exciting because we can use our skills that we can play our saxophone with, and we can access all these other sounds as well. Yeah. Because you don't always want to sound like a saxophone, do you? Yeah. Sometimes you do want to sound like a harmonica.
The other thing that, you know, I think is useful for saxophone players to think about as well, of course, some keyboard players will, I mean, they'll obviously record into their computer using a keyboard. Well, now we can do it as well, right, as a saxophone player. So you can put a bass line in. You know, I can even do, if I wanted to do... you know, I can put some drums in a track. I can do anything with that harmony that's in a certain key or whatever.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, if you want to print music, you know, if you want to play into something like Sibelius and write a score out or use it for that, you can do that as well. You might not have facility as a keyboard player to do that, but you can do it in real time from something like an Aerophone.
Yeah, really interesting. So you make it look so easy, Alistair, when... when you do all of your stuff there, that makes it look simple. But I can remember when I first picked up one, I thought, this is it. I heard Michael Brecker. Now I've got an Iwi in my hands. It's going to be a piece of cake. And it really wasn't. There's a massive learning curve. And I suppose that's a good point for us to make just as we're wrapping up, because just like learning a saxophone, where you've got to develop your skills, like we said earlier about your embouchure and obviously your finger technique, as well as all of your expression and stuff, when you are learning something like an aerophone, then you've still got to learn some skills to really make use of it. You can pick it up, like I was saying about my son, and make quick music, and that's brilliant.
Yeah.
But if you really want to dig into it, I suppose you need to be prepared to put some time in, right?
Absolutely. You've got to put some time in. It reminds me, you know, sometimes we get this a lot, don't we? You know, oh, such and such sax player, well, he uses a such and such a mouthpiece, and he's got this sax. So if I buy that same stuff, I'm going to sound just like him. Maybe not. I get the same on the Aerophone. I'll play something on the Aerophone and people will say, oh, what sound are you using? Well, I'll sound like you if I'm using that exact same sound. Maybe not. Because there's a whole lot of stuff going on, just like in saxophone playing. It's not only your setup with your reed and your mouthpiece, but it's the way you use your breath. It's your articulation. It's your phrasing. All of that stuff happens the same way on a wind synthesizer as well. And it takes practice.
Yeah, so there's good things and bad things about that, right? I mean, obviously it's a slight negative because it means there's a learning curve. But the good thing is, as a saxophone player, you could be still working on a lot of the musical expression type skills that you use on saxophone when you're working on your aerophone. So one of the things I always struggled with the aerophone or any of these digi instruments, digi saxes, is I'm reasonably tech, but I'm not a tech whiz. I just can't be bothered with digging into all of the stuff. And so I've always found that there it took a bit of patience, and I needed to do a fair bit of like learning and digging in and that sort of thing. And that's why I was really excited when I came across what you're doing, because you're actually teaching people how to use aerophones and digisaxes with the iSax Academy. Tell us a bit about that, because I know some of our sax school students are also getting help with you on that.
That's right. So this was a new thing for me. 2 years ago, I started doing it, and it's been way more successful than I ever dreamt it would be. A friend of mine actually suggested I should do it, and I kind of said, well, no, I don't think so. But I'm so glad I did, because it's been great. You know what it's like to draw a community of people together. People start to connect with me and with each other. So I do basically two courses. There's a basics course, which is really going from scratch. You know, here's a G, here's a little tune with a G in it. Here's a G and an A, now let's play some G and A tunes, you know. And it's got backing tracks, it's got fingerings that you can see in real time on the side of the screen. So it's all very much, you know, step by step, with extra stuff about more aerophone related things. But the system I teach with that is absolutely going to dovetail with anybody doing saxophone, because although we've got a lot of extra fingering possibilities on an aerophone, I teach that basics course exactly like you're playing a saxophone, with a few little extra additions that you can do on the aerophone. And then on the advanced course, that's where I'm teaching about all those tricks. How do you make a drone sound? How do you make this thing without even blowing it? How do you create a sound that's got four sounds combined together? How do you do harmony? All of that kind of cool stuff that people need some help with. So rather than going through all this boring manual, which no one could ever get the gist of, I've got proper step-by-step instructions. This is how you make a sound. This is how you can save it yourself and manipulate your own sounds, do exactly what you do with all the controls the way you want them to be, not just the way it's set on here.
Yeah, sounds brilliant. I mean, I think that's a really valuable resource for anybody who's looking to add a wind synth to their arsenal of instruments, but also wants to get serious and actually dig into it and learn how to use it properly. That's brilliant. Yeah. And hey, just before we wrap up then, Alistair, any advice for people about choosing a wind synth? Maybe anything they should be avoiding or be cautious of?
You know, this is one of our problems. The wind synths are falling into an uneasy position, because people in woodwind shops generally don't have a lot of knowledge of digital instruments. And people in like the keyboard shops, they don't have a lot of information on woodwind instruments. So it's actually a little bit tricky to go into a place and get really good advice, you know, on a wind synth. So I would say your primary place here is get onto YouTube and just start going down those rabbit holes, because there is plenty of stuff. I've got my own YouTube channel, but there's loads of other stuff on wind synthesizers as well. I would say that's the place you're going to start off with. Do be a little bit mindful about which type of instrument you want to go for. Is it primarily for practice, or do you want the extra sounds? What I would say is that the aerophone for me hits a really good sweet spot, because it's pretty close to saxophone feeling, but you've got all this extra sounds that you can do as well. So it kind of goes straight down the middle and fits a lot of people's requirements, really.
Awesome. Well, look, I it's really great to talk to you, Alistair. I love what you're doing with the iSax.academy, and that's where people can go to find out more about your course.
Absolutely, iSax.academy. That's the place to go. And just a little tip for you all, if you do want to look into it, make sure you sign up to the mailing list first, because then you'll get a mail from me, and that will give you a discount code that you can get a better price on all the courses.
Hey, thanks so much for listening today. Don't forget you can get the full transcription from today's show, which is episode number 4, over at saxschoolonline.com/podcast. And if you're not already a Sax School member, don't forget you can grab the 14-day trial to check it out yourself over at saxschoolonline.com. You'll be up and running in just a few minutes, and you'll be joining thousands of other learners just like you. There's a huge lesson library, and you can get help from our amazing team of tutors. But for now, though, thanks so much for joining us. Keep practicing hard. And we'll catch you next time.